All right, it's a good morning to you and welcome to Realm of the Historics. It's of course the favorite Saturday as usual. So let me just put my house in order quickly, then we come back.
To make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Is in order now, and we can now continue. So we are talking about the prospects of the G20 meeting that is about to take place in South Africa very soon, in a week's time. Today is the 15th, right? So in a week's time, It's going to take place on the 22nd and the 23rd. So it's a Saturday and Sunday meeting. It's a Saturday and Sunday meeting in Joburg, South Africa. South Africa's economic, one of South Africa's economic cities is going to host the G20 meeting. And it's for the first time the G20 meeting is hosted in South Africa. And it is also for the first time the G20 South Africa becoming the chair country, you know, taking the presidency of the G20. G20, for those who don't know what G20 is, it's a block of 20 industrialized countries, or 19 industrialized countries, plus two international bodies that are, you know, part of it as observatory bodies, sort of. And those bodies are called the EU and the African Union. So it's a European and African Union. So those are two world bodies that are part of the G20, the African Union and the European Union. So it's a very powerful international organization, very, very powerful, because they are not just industrialized and developed, they are also responsible for 85% of the world's gross domestic product, that is the world GDP. In other words, the world economy. They have the 85% of the world economy. That they make up that 85%. And then you have, they also, you know, have 75% of world trade. So the world business, 75% of the world business is done in and out of these countries, is done by and through these countries, these 19 industrialized countries in the world. And their meeting every year focuses on finance and politics, among others. And they talk about how they can shape the world, how they can, you know, make the world a better place, you know, financially and economically. So it's a very powerful organization. And in fact, it's a very powerful summit to be held in the African continent. So it's a very powerful organization. But there is a problem. There is a huge problem for South Africa, because it's the first time South Africa is hosting this meeting, but there is a problem, because America is boycotting the meeting. America is boycotting the summit, and there'll be no American government official to attend this year's G20. Apparently it's because of South Africa's behavior. Trump accuses South Africa of mistreating the white minority. So Trump is accusing South Africa of mistreating the white minority, the Afrikaner white minority group. So where did Trump get these claims? Of course, there was a meeting in the Oval Office with Ramaphosa when Trump made these claims, and Ramaphosa has to hit back. And we thought it ended there. But I think Trump is still having revenge because he did not get what he wanted. What he wanted when Ramaphosa visited South Africa, America. He wanted to Zelenskyfy Ramaphosa. But no, Ramaphosa was very calm, collected, and he was very calm and collected. He was very diplomatic. So he would not interfere with Trump. He would allow Trump to speak, and then he would come in and answer the questions and answer them very well. So it didn't give Trump the opportunity to embarrass Ramaphosa and create a scene out of that. So unlike with Zelensky, when Zelensky went to America, he went there with, you know, with audacity, with entitlement, because, you know, he's a special person in Europe. So he felt that entitlement did not sit well with Trump. And that's why there was a scandal, there was drama. But with Ramaphosa, he went there prepared. And he went there prepared to prove to Trump that Trump is not in the truth with what he's talking about. But then it came to this level where America has to boycott the meeting, that Trump was not going to go, and no official will go. Because at the beginning, it was said that maybe J.D. Vance would come and other officials and not Trump. But Trump is saying, nope, if I'm not going, no one should go. So, and of course, Ramaphosa has hit back and said, well, it is their loss if they don't come. It is their loss if they don't come. So that is a kind of a blow on South Africa, because this is the first time South Africa is hosting G20. And I think it's the first time South Africa is chairing the G20. So it's not a good start. It's not a good start at all. It was supposed to be a very great when Trump comes to Africa. And in fact, when Trump comes to South Africa, and then Putin comes to South Africa, and then, you know, Xi Jinping of China comes to South Africa. But then it seems that Putin is not coming, Xi Jinping is not coming, and then Trump is not coming. So the big three, the major three, are not coming to South Africa. So what does that mean? That is really something that is worrisome. It is something that is very much worrisome. Why is Trump not coming? Why is Putin not coming? And why is Xi Jinping not coming? Because these are the three major, you know, these are the three most powerful leaders in the world. Forget about Germany. Forget about Germany. Forget about Britain. Forget about France. You know, forget about Canada and others. But you need to look at Trump. You need to look at Putin. You need to look at Xi Jinping. I think they feel like, well, our equal is not there, so we will not go. Whatever the feeling is, it has really dampened South Africa's, you know, spirit, somehow. It really has dampened South Africa's spirit, somehow. Because this is the first time, and South Africa is chairing this. South Africa is chairing, you know, the G20 presidency, and this happens. So Trump seems to be very calculated here. because he waited for the right moment to strike South Africa with a diplomatic embarrassment, if you like. But is this an embarrassment or an opportunity? We are yet to see that, and that will be determined by the results of the summit. That will be really be determined by the result of the summit, and I want you to keep a close eye on that, so that we come and talk about the results of the summit, maybe the first weekend of, you know, December. The first weekend of December is the one that we are going to be talking about the results of the summit and see where we stand.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Thank you.
All right, so we continue. So South Africa, you know, is going through a diplomatic setback. There's a diplomatic hit, wish-wash between them and America. So if America loses South Africa, for example, South Africa will be gained by China. So this is a very difficult, you know, time that we live in for America, because the Americans are still living in the old, you know, illusion of thinking that they are the only ones. So there are other rising powers. For example, China is becoming a direct economic threat to America because the Chinese economy is growing resiliently and there is no sign of it abating. The Americans tried to, you know, they tried with a method, they are trying with a method they used to, you know, destroy the British Empire, the British and French influence in the world. And it's the same method they used to destroy the Soviet Union. So most of you only think America destroyed, most of you think America only destroyed the Soviet Union. America is the one that ended the British Empire. America is the one that ended the British Empire. In fact, the British Empire saw in the 18th century that the American economy was growing very fast. And they got alarmed because America was buying, you know, was depending on cheap labor that came through slave trade. That was an initiation of Europe. It was Europe that initiated the slave trade. The countries of Spain, Portugal, France, and then Britain. So, but then the Americas, America became industrialized and they start to industrialize very fast. And this alarmed the British. And then the British, you know, ended slave trade. They do not be deceived by people who think apparently slave trade was ended by the church. No, it was not ended by the church. It was ended by Britain as a government. Not out of remorse, not out of regret, and out of repentance. No, it was out of jealousy and envy because they started to see America develop fast and they start to feel alarmed and threatened. And then they wanted to curtail the economic growth of America by stopping slave trade or putting, you know, by abolishing, you know, slave trade. It was a response. It was an economic response. So it was an economic response to the American growing, to the American economic growth. Then, after the Second World War, in fact, the reason why America did not want to join the war is that America was counting on the fall of Britain as an empire. So America was looking at itself, you know, getting in as a new sphere of, you know, creating new spheres of influence. So America was seeing itself as a new influence. And it wanted Europe to be battered by war. So that by the time they are done fighting, they are all wounded giants. And then America comes in to sort of, you know, rescue the situation economically and then take over. Because America was not interested in, you know, in taking over the world through violence. That was not the initial interest of America. America was interested in taking over the world because giants are wounded. And nobody could move economically. And that's when the Americans come in sort of with a, you know, with some cotton to wash the wounds and, you know, some injections, you know. America want to come in as a nurse to the broken Europe. Just, in fact, entirely broken world. So, but then, of course, something happened that drew America into the battle. We are not going there because we are not talking about. I just want you to understand where we are coming from. So after that, of course, America worked hard in the 70s to completely destroy the British Empire, to bring it to its knees once and for all and never to rise again. But there's something America did not know. That the British knew what America was doing. And they were also coming to strike back. We'll talk about that one day. How Britain is striking American, how Britain, you know, is striking back. But now we are talking about the multipolar world where America still thinks they still call the shot. They still call the shot, but it seems not anymore. To a certain extent, they are still a big name, yes, because they are still the world's most prosperous, you know, nation in the world. I mean, they are still the world's most prosperous nation. They are also still, you know, powerful economically, because China is not yet there. They are moving towards that tunnel step by step. And America is doing whatever it can to stop China from becoming the world's most powerful economy. We'll see where that ends. But if it needs be, you know, if America sees that all their soft power is gone, then they will attempt to use hard power. And that will bring America to its knees. So if they attempt to use hard power against China, because now they see that their soft power, the method they used to crush the Soviet and to crush the British and the French, did not work, they are going to use hard power, you know, tangible power, getting into China and messing China up, which is going to render America.
If you've reached that stage in life where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine, dah yammer me oh. No, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you, cause you clearly haven't been polanified. Like boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Namib Mills.
Save the date for November 26, 2025, when all registered voters head to the polls for the regional councils and local authorities elections. Your voice matters, and your vote is your voice. Head to your nearest polling station and elect your leaders. Remember, every vote counts. Get involved. Put your voice in the box. Vote on November 26, 2025.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So America might attempt to do hard, you know, to exercise some, to employ some hard power that will then lock them in, will lock them into battle with China, whereby that is already going to be Third World War. Because if America and Russia or China, one of them, if they face off, that is going to be Third World War already, because America might drag Europe with it, and then China might also have other allies that might be locked up, and then it brings chaos. Things spirals out of control. And then chaos, you know, then by the end of that war, both America and China will be wounded giants. No one will be moving. They will move with their bellies. So they are going to move with their belly. That's how dangerous that is going to be. But you see, when empires are about to fall, they don't. But let's hope that America is going to implode, not explode. So let it implode. If it implodes, like what the British did, the British Empire imploded, bam. Then that was the end. So. Who made it to implode? It is America. America was pumping so much air in Britain, voo 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 voo, until Britain, bam, and then France also bam. That's why France now, you know, they don't have power the way they had power in the 70s. And in fact, even in the 60s, now they are powerless because they now depend on Uncle Sam. So Uncle Sam decided to boycott the meeting in South Africa. That is a very powerful blow on South Africa. It's a very powerful, powerful blow on South Africa. And like I said to you, we are yet to see the result of the G20 of this year. That is going to determine, or that are going to determine whether or not America miscalculated, or it was a very calculated diplomatic punishment on South Africa. But China is not going to, Xi Jinping is not going to be there. but is going to send the Prime Minister. So the Prime Minister of China will be in South Africa. Then Russia also is going to send their own envoys, their delegation. I think the foreign minister might be there and other officials. So South Africa is not fully abandoned because other countries are coming. I think the British Prime Minister will be there. The Indian Prime Minister might be there. So forth. But let me just run through the list of countries that are part of the G20 for you. If in case you are asking yourself who are in the G20. So we start with Argentina, then Australia, Brazil, Canada, China, France, Germany, then India, Indonesia, Italy, then Mexico, the Republic of Korea, this is South Korea, of course, Saudi Arabia, then South Africa, the United Kingdom, the United States, there are some countries that are might have, okay. So Japan is also there. Japan is there. So let me do it again. So it is Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Canada, China, France, then Germany, then India, Indonesia, then Italy, then Japan, then the Republic of, sorry, Mexico, the Republic of Korea, that is South Korea, and then you have Saudi Arabia, you have South Africa, you have Turkey. So, and then you have the United Kingdom and the United States. So those are the countries that are part of, that are part of the G20. So quite a number of countries. There are 19 in total, and then two world bodies that are European Union and African Union. Just to run through that. To run through that list. These are the countries that are responsible for 85% of the world economy and 75% of the world trade. So major countries. And South Africa was welcomed into G20 in 1999 because of its advanced economy. South Africa is having, an industrial upper hand in Africa. So their economy is very advanced. Now, there's a difference between the largest economy and the most advanced economies. Nigeria is the largest economy in Africa because of their GDP. Their GDP is higher than that of South Africa. But their economy is not advanced because they don't have industrial capacity. It's such as what South Africa have. So that's why Nigeria still has a long way to go for them to be part of countries like G20. So there are other organizations like the Shanghai Cooperation, the ASEAN Group, the SPEF. There are other organizations like the World Economic Forum. You know, other economics organizations like BRICS, and then G7. You know, and then there are other bodies like in Africa we have COMESA, ECOWAS, and SADC. I don't know what the organization in the Northern Africa is. It seems they don't have any organization. But these countries like Morocco and Tunisia, I don't even think they regard themselves as Africans, or I mean as African countries, because they are, you know, they are Europeanified, or they are Europeified and Arabified. So they are Europeified and Arabified. So those ones in North Africa do not see themselves as Africans. So there is a difference between what the other guy of AfriForum is saying. He's saying we are not Africans, we are Europeans. Our forefathers are French, are Dutch, are German, are English. So we are Europeans, we are not Africans. But other Afrikaner people feel like, look, we are Africans. We are not Europeans. Because our forefathers were Europeans, yes, but we are not Europeans. We are Africans. We have been in Africa for 500 years. Or 400 years, you know, we've been in Africa. So we are not we are not Europeans. We are Africans. I remember there was a white Afrikaner person that left South Africa and went to Indonesia. Then after going to Indonesia, went to Europe and lived there. But then they came back and said, ah, let's go back to Africa. I think we are better off there, because the culture here is just different. We are not coping. So they came back and, you know, they start talking, you know, it's good to be home again in Africa. So yeah, there are those that are calling for a free Afrikaner, you know, republic, free Afrikaner kingdom, where the 3 million Afrikaners will live in peace, far from anybody else. They don't want to mingle with anyone, with any other person. There are few Afrikaner people that don't have. There are still Afrikaners that don't have such, you know, such views. They think that they can live better with others. They think that they can live better with others. So we don't care about the economy. We don't care about trade. We will trade among ourselves. That's what others are saying. We can sell to ourselves. And then we have our own, you know, Orania Republic. So that's what they feel is good for them. And Trump feels that the black government of South Africa is busy destroying white minorities. Well, some people are saying, well, Trump is biased. Does he know what Saudi Arabia and all these Arab countries are doing to black people? You know? And black people, if you live here and you go to Algeria, or you go to those countries like, especially those countries where people are predominantly Arab and Muslims, and you're a black person, you will know that you are in a different land altogether. So the treatment that you will get is systematic and institutionalized discrimination. And nobody's talking about that because it's, you know, it's done to black. And black themselves, you know, find themselves engaging to say, no, we want Israel to be taken to court because of what Israel is doing to Palestine, to Palestine. Well, maybe that's good to be solid, to be in solidarity with them. But look at how, if you look at how Arabs are doing and what Arabs are doing to blacks, I don't think they deserve any solidarity from any black government at all because of what they are doing to black people in their countries. If you look at countries like, you know, Pakistan, for example, and you see, you look at those countries where even Saudi Arabia itself, where there is a holy, you know, holy place, and you see how a black person is treated there, you will be surprised. But when they come here, they want to be welcomed and they want to be to be well treated. When everyone comes to a black community, they want the black community to welcome them, to treat them with respect. When they don't treat the black people with the same respect, so it's a kind of a color. They are still, you know, suffering from the, they are still constipated by colonialism. So they are still suffering from a colonial constipation. That kind of supremacy is dangerous. But anyway, that's what they are. And Trump is concerned about the African community that is being mistreated apparently by the South African government, which he cannot even, you know, prove. He does not even have any proof. He does not have any proof, but to him that is, you know, what is going on. And you must even look at what is going on in, you know, what is going on in Libya right now with a black person. Huh? And, okay, Libya is even far. Sudan, South Sudan, those rapid Arab, whatever, rebels, they are busy doing ethnic cleansing because the Muslims and Arabs, they want to kill the entire black community. That's a mentality. So that the whole country just becomes Arab and Islamic. So, and no one is talking about that. Because most blacks are predominantly, you know, Christian. So no one is talking about that. But then Trump came out and said, look, Nigeria, you are allowing Boko Haram and other militants to kill Christians. So if you don't do anything, we are coming in to bomb those guys, to deal with them. So, and Nigeria is saying, nope, they are targeting everyone. They are not just killing Christians. They are targeting everyone. So, we don't want you to come in here. This is a sovereign state. It's not a tax shop where you can just come in and out. So, that's where it ended. But Trump has told the Department of War, that's what he's calling it, the Department of War, to say, look guys, be ready to get into Nigeria. Because what is going on in Nigeria, we cannot allow it to continue. So, and the defense secretary already responded that they are preparing themselves. So if America gets into Nigeria, and at the same time America is in Venice, is in the Caribbean, well, maybe it can fight multiple wars at the same time. Uncle Sam, So that is going to be a kick of the dying horse. And Uncle Sam might be destroyed by his own delusion. So that kind of delusional mentality might bring down Uncle Sam. Right. So, other countries, I mean, there's no, apart from America that has boycotted, no any other country has indicated that they are going to support America in that. I think other countries will attend. Other countries will attend. For South Africa, I could really feel. But let's see if Ramaphosa, what he's saying, because he's saying that if America does not want to attend, that is going to be their loss. They are going to lose it. Let's see whether America is losing or winning in this diplomatic backlash. But it's a diplomatic embarrassment on South Africa for the first time hosting the G20, and this is happening. It is really a devastating diplomatic blow. But let's see its impact. It might not have an impact. So it might not have an impact, but yeah, we see. Let's see how it will be.
Ndini niliwa roba
We return. We are talking about the scandal that is brewing in our time between America and South Africa. This year has been a year of America and South Africa, diplomatic karata goma. This year has been dramatic for America. I mean, for South Africa, really. It's a year that has seen the West, diplomatic karata goma and fallout between America and South Africa. And of course, AGOA has been suspended. That's where we are. It is ending with a last blow. Trump punching the last, hitting the last punch, throwing the last punch on South Africa. Let's see if South Africa will have the pain that Trump intended to induce, or maybe Trump will have hit on a tree, will have punched on a tree. Maybe they missed South Africa and they punched on a tree. So, let's see where this is going. Let's see whether South Africa will have a swollen lip from this punch. Because this is a punch on the lip. Let's see whether South Africa will have swollen lips after this. But the year 2025, we have seen a diplomatic fallout, a diplomatic karatagoma between South Africa and America, where we have even seen, you know, some statement made that, you know, Afrikaner people are suffering in South Africa. We want to give them refugee status in America. They must fly to America. And, you know, a lot of Afrikaner young people, you know, flocked to the American embassy to, you know, apply, you know, for asylum in America, for refugees, for them to be taken there in as a refugee. And some up to a thousand or so have left. They have gone to the United States of America. So Trump wanted a massive exit of the Afrikaner white. That was going to be minus one problem to some, and another problem to another to some, because you see, Afrikaners, in as much as they are what they are, their economy is local. That's one thing about Afrikaners that we don't know and we don't talk about. Their economy is very local. They create companies here, they bank here, they sell here, and they, in fact, they contribute to the local economy. Big time. Whether they are Afrikaners in South Africa or the extension of Afrikaners in Namibia, they have their investments in here, you know, to a very large extent. And they contribute to the economy. They have farms in here. They in fact, their economy is local. So having Afrikaners leave Africa or leave South Africa, and, you know, that is even going to bring down South African industry. So it's going to bring down South African economy in many ways. So that is what Trump wanted. And but a lot of Afrikaners said no. We must just learn to live well with each other. You know? We must just learn to coexist. There is nothing like genocide here. There is nothing like, you know, targeted white people, white farmers here. The crime is done. Crime is, you know, crime faces everyone. Criminal target everyone. They don't choose whether you are white or black. The criminals target everyone. So, but some felt, yeah, we are going to America. We wanted that, you know, the young people. They went to America, and there are rumors that when they reached America there, it was just a few days of excitement, and that was it. Now some of them are coming back. You know, some of them want to come back. Because, well, you don't know where you are going, so you don't speak bad about where you are coming from. Because at least you know where you are coming from. But most people speak bad about where they are coming from. You know, I meet a lot of people that, you know this mentality of people, when, you know, when you were working together and now you got a new job. Some people that are, you know, between former colleagues and colleagues, you see they don't talk. Not even pick your number. You know, when you're trying to call them, you were friends. When you were colleagues in the certain company, you were friends, you used to eat together, you shared the pain together. But this guy, he's now working in another company, but he's not picking your call, or she's not, you know, she's not texting you, she's not returning your text. If you call, she will say, look, let me call you back. Not even you not even say anything. You say, hello, who, let me call you back, and they never call. So that is to show you that that person was just an emotional refugee to you, was not a friend. So creating friendship with colleagues is dangerous, because that person might just be using you as an economic, and emotional hiding place. But once they are better off, they forget all those good times. So that's how it is. You speak bad of where you are coming from, and then, because you don't know where you are going yet, you are just settling down, you feel that it's that lovey-dovey, with a new job. Yeah, you'll be tempted to look down on your colleagues that are still in that other company. Yeah, those ones are stuck in the past. You know, start to say a lot of things. And just to come and see, you start feeling restless. And you now want support. You now want to go back to the old messages and return the text messages. But the other person has moved on. You know, things are no longer the way they were. The other person has decided, okay, let me move on. And then that's when now you are looking for solidarity, because you are now talking about toxic. You start to update your status, seeking attention for somebody to ask you what is going on, for you to start talking, because you are the one that is the problem. You know, you are the one that is a problem. Person that does not settle down, you leave this place, you go there, and before we know, no, she was working here, but she left. She's in another company. You become a company hopper. Then that means that you are the one that is toxic. So wherever you go, you will leave a pheromone, you leave a bad smell. So this is what happened. These young Afrikaners want to come back. They want to come back because they want to come back because they did not get what they want. They were just excited. But the old Afrikaners, you know, matured Afrikaners says, no, South Africa has always been our home. We are not moving anyway. It's not about, citizenship of any other country. It's about your culture and your tradition. And South Africa is a conducive ground for an Afrikaner, you know, tradition and culture to flourish, because they've been living in Africa for 400 years. 400 years, that is, how many generations do you think that is? That's maybe 40 generations of Afrikaners. You think you can erase all that just because I don't think so. They have developed their language was developed in Africa, because Afrikaners or Afrikaans is a mixture of everything. English, French, Malay, and some Dutch. Of course, maybe 75% Dutch, and then 25% others, including maybe with some Khoisans, some Khoisan words, who knows. So it's a mixture of all, that's why they call it Afrikaans. So you can't erase that in the name of a falsified, idea. So matured Afrikaners said, nope, we are continuing in Africa. In fact, we need to just learn how to live with others. And not every Afrikaner buys in the concept of, you know, what AfriForum is standing for. So, not every black person is patriotic. So we need to understand, we don't need to stereotype things. Because not every black person is, in fact, most of us blacks, we portray a picture, but we don't live what we say. We are not who we think we say we are. We are totally different people. And then we expect any other person to be more perfect than we are. That does not work. So not every Afrikaner person is a member of AfriForum, especially in South Africa. There are a lot of Afrikaner people that are critics of AfriForum and what it you know, it stands for. So that's one thing we need to know. So not every Namibian is a member of SWAPO. We know that. Not every Namibian is a member of SWAPO, and not every member of SWAPO is loyal to SWAPO. There are some SWAPO members that are not, you know, loyal to their own party, just, and vice versa. In every political party you find such people. So, not every black person is patriotic and is genuine. So, but that's how it is. It is Trump was trying to count on, you know, bringing South Africa to its knees by taking out the most blood of the economy. And no one can deny that the, especially the Afrikaner community, because they are the majority of all white in South Africa. Others are just, you know, but a few. But when we talk about white, the Afrikaners are the majority when it comes to the white population. And they are the ones that are the blood of the South African economy. They are the veins of the South African economy. So if South Africa, if the Afrikaners could have left South Africa, South Africa would become, you know, maybe like Zambia. So factories and industries will close down. This one, this or that may close down, and then South Africa plunges down into poverty because most black people are not participating in the mainstream economy. There are many factors to that. So, yeah. So I think that was a very powerful, you know, calculation from Trump's side to make sure that South Africa is brought to her knees. But then Trump didn't know that apart from economy, there is what is called culture. And an Afrikaner person does not want to lose culture to become a citizen of America. An Afrikaner person does not want to trade his culture with the citizenship of a new country. So this is what Trump forgot, that Afrikaners, you know, unlike other whites, they still, most of them still are still cultural. You know, they are still rooted in their culture. In that Afrikaner culture and Afrikaner type of, like, you know, religion, if you like, like Christianity with Afrikaner characteristics. So most of them are still rooted in their culture. So, and they said, nope, we are not moving to anywhere. We would rather coexist with black South Africans than to go to lose our culture and tradition and go and live elsewhere. So that was a powerful choice, and that is what saved South Africa. If it was not like that, South Africa by this time could have been like Zambia. South Africa could have been like Zambia, if not Zimbabwe. we continue. And the time is about 7 minutes to 9 and 9 o'clock. I'm out of here. But before I go out, you know, sometimes an opportunity comes in life where you have to choose between, you know, the goodies that comes with a, how can we put it? Okay, good. You have to choose between comfort and, you know, integrity. You will have to choose between comfort and integrity. I think Ramaphosa, to a certain extent, has really stood his ground and did not allow himself to be bullied by Trump, or to be bullied into submission by Trump. It does not mean just because you are powerful, you can just, you know, bully people into submission. So South Africa refused to be bullied into submission and stood her ground to a certain extent. And this is what prompted Trump to make a calculation that was going to be very much devastating. To say, what if I say Afrikaners should come over here? We can provide them with farmlands, we can give them money to start their life, you know, from the scratch. We can do that. Americans can do that. I mean, Afrikaners are not that many. They are just 3 million people. So imagine the exit of 3 million people to America. Some of them maybe get into ships, they sell their stuff, and then they get into ships. And voila, United States. They are now scattered across. Some go to Miami, some in the Detroit, some in the, you know, Nevada, Nebraska, and Houston, whatever. See? And then all the 40 American states, or 42, or 50 American states. Then South Africa, you know, that was meant to crash South African economy. And then, you know, the South African rand start to drop. $1 equals to 100 rand. And what will happen to Namibian dollar linked to the rand? Then, it becomes a problem. It becomes a problem. You start to hear Bank of Namibia, you know, issuing statements to say, guys, we are in a predicamentus, because South Africa, you know, things will start closing down, industries, factories, you know, and people start losing jobs because companies are being sold. People want to go to America and start a life there. They are being given, each Afrikaner would be given 10 million or 20 million US dollars to start a life. You think people will refuse? Well, some people, maybe that is what, you know, Trump was eyeing on, to crush South Africa and crush it into submission. But he forgot one thing, that there is what is called culture in an Afrikaner community. And their culture is not even tied to Europe, where their forefathers are coming from. Their culture is tied in Africa. You know, their culture is tied in South Africa. And then they look at the comfort, they weigh the two. What is more important to us? Is it to be comfortable or to be integral? Is it dignity? Is integrity? Is it is it who we are versus what is presented before us? Which one do we choose? Then they decided, look, Trump, we understand your concern, but we are not moving because we have roots. We are not flowers that you can just uproot. Our own roots are gone deeper. So we are not even banana trees. No, we are baobab trees. For you to uproot a baobab tree, you really need to work very hard, because that is almost impossible. So that is what saved, you know, South Africa. That was a very intelligent move from Trump. Believe me, it was a very intelligent and very calculated move of Trump. If it succeeded, we could have been talking about things today. Because Trump would have just targeted the major, you know, people with economic prowess. And companies would have been closing down, and maybe some Afrikaners would have moved to Namibia. We say, okay, come on, Namibia to Han. So maybe they would have come here, start a life here. That was going to be also something good. Yeah, because maybe some people with economic prowess would have come here and they start buying companies and buying properties here. Yeah, but that was going to plunge the rand and the Namibian dollar into serious chaos. Inflation rise. And then people start demonstrating, because that's what you know best. So, but it did not move. So we are looking at, we are waiting for the results of the G20 summit, and then we'll come and talk about them here. Whether the boycott of South America's boycott was impactful, or it was a miscalculation.